Welcome to the Rearview Mirror Podcast, looking back on all that we don't know and a few things that we do.
You want to finish your, did you ever congeal, I hate that word, because it makes me think of congealed salad.
Yuck.
Do you want to congeal your thoughts on leadership idolatry? Did you have any more thoughts on that?
I would love to tell you I have figured out what I was going what was going on in me, but I really haven't much yet. I honestly haven't gone back to it. You said you listened to the podcast. And
I did. I'm trying to think now what I thought about it. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's what you
that's
said.
You and I on it. Hey, shout out Jeff and Steve.
Dang, we're good.
You used the phrase directional leader.
Yeah.
And I think you said, what makes a directional leader more important than another, more valuable than another type of leader? What makes a CEO more valuable than a CFO?
Mm-hmm.
So in your mind, as a directional leader in the church, a CEO, we're just jumping right in today.
Yeah.
Is a directional leader the CEO?
Probably functionally, that's what they usually look like. Yeah. Yeah.
Any significance to that term, directional leader, for you? Or should we just move on?
Yeah. I don't know that there's a lot there other than, you know, when I used to hear it, I just hated the phrase, you know, like direction is more important than relationship is more important than, strategy is more important than spirituality is what it became. And I just didn't care for that. But, you know, on the other hand, crap, I got my terms that I'm limited in how I use as well. So,
yeah.
But for some reason, that was stuck in my craw. I know when we were talking on that last episode.
Yeah, I remember it came up a couple of times.
Yeah.
When you were a pastor, were you a directional leader?
Well, I think I offered a lot of direction in things.
Were you tabbed?
But
as
I was
a
not tabbed as a directional. And I was always the relational guy.
Yeah, I could see that.
Because I can be with people in a healthy way, relatively speaking. So, you know, that was the, again, I think part of those labels is it puts people in such little buckets. And again, not that I think I can be everything. I don't. But I think part of being really a strong leader relationally is that you're offering direction, especially in the church, for how people relate. You know, part of being a strategic leader is that you're offering direction in how we're going to get the stuff done that we need to do. So there is something about that term that sticks with me of like, it bothered me a lot. But
why do you think, though? So where my brain goes with that is, okay, in the work world, I don't expect, this is not always true, I don't expect the CFO to be uber relational.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, so what, why would you expect the strategic pastor to be relational?
I don't think I'm saying that.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, but I think anybody, I don't care what level of leadership you're in, needs to be somewhat relational.
Well, yeah, sure.
Everything,
but that's not their strength.
To me, everything does. I guess this is it. Going back to the phrase we used in that last podcast. To me, everything doesn't rise and fall on leadership. It rises and falls on relationship. You can. I'm not saying you can't build an organization that be incredibly quote unquote successful and not have good relationships, but it's going to generally look like the army or a factory where everybody is assigned a task, and I don't really care about if you want to do or not. This is what you're here to do. This is your grade. You're an E4. Go get this done. I don't ever want to be a part of an organization like that.
Right.
And I think sometimes in organizations that we miss that the other components, slash we don't value them as much. There's not a sense of equal value in them. And so, therefore, you know, an organization tilts toward whatever is talked about the most. And, you know, I think in healthy organizations, all those things are equally valuable. I don't care if there's a different paycheck necessarily connected to them per se, but at some level there is a sense of, gosh, because if we don't have the strategy guys, nothing gets done in a timely manner. If we don't have the operational guy, nothing gets done, you know. They all have to work in harmony, for want of a better word.
Yeah, I have to think about that. That's a good thought.
Yeah.
Maybe the church is different than the business world in that way.
Maybe
I think of all the, you know, more so back in our day than probably today. Mm-hmm. But I think it's probably like any organization. You know, there are a ton of sports teams that had a lot of success that didn't get along and didn't have harmony.
Right. Right.
And so you think, were they successful? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did they have harmony? Were they great relationally? I don't think so.
Right. Yeah.
So I don't know, but that's our probably you and I's different personalities.
Yeah. Some of that certainly.
And I don't, when I work at a place, I do want to get along with the people that I work mm-hmm. with, and I want to value their expertise. I don't need to be friends with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, I appreciate that. And I know I'm informed by who I am, you know, in my,
well, me too.
My wiring and my bent toward relationship. You know, I think it's why when I read leadership books, I'm not drawn to the C-suite or the CEO guys that are writing the great books on how to drive your organization to higher profits. I'm drawn to the Patrick Lencioni's who's writing about relational and organizational health. You know, that's mm-hmm. that's the kind of stuff that I'm more drawn to yeah. and that I think builds good organizations.
Right.
But I know this, if it's only relational, then we just sit around, hold hands and sing kumbaya and nothing gets done. So again, I'm not advocating that it needs to be only one. It's just that there is this idolatry of a certain type of leadership, I feel like, that I just think can be counterproductive. And honestly, it can create, I think, some big holes in the organization, and it can cause an organization to lose the ability to have a healthy accountability. It's why we've seen, I mean, this transcends church world, this transcends corporate world. It's why stories like Enron happened. It's why stories like, I mean, golly, how many of those stories can we talk about?
Yeah.
Where leadership had no check and balances, no sense of accountability, because all the eyes got focused on one thing. The health of the organization didn't matter. It was just like, man, we are rocking and rolling. We are making the money now. You know,
right.
we're building the more numbers coming in, whatever the industry is.
Right.
So I think
right.
that's my whole point when we started that, is just going, and obviously I don't have much to contribute to it in a meaningful, thoughtful way, but I do think, God, there's something in me, as we got talking about that, I just thought that's what I would love if I were working back in a place besides where I am now, just as a self-employed dude. I would want to find, and maybe what I want to find is a unicorn, but I'd want to find a place that really valued all of those areas. I do want somebody that can vision cast and dream and go strong, but I also want somebody that goes, gosh, but I want to defer to relational things when they need to be deferred to. You know, if the operational guys say that's impossible to do, you know, I think that was one of the things I used to get so frustrated by, is we'd have these operational guys that would, you know, get a call on a, you know, if something was due on a Monday morning, mm-hmm. let's say, they'd get a call Sunday afternoon at 6:15 saying, hey, I know you've worked on this all week and it's a good job, but can you throw it all away? And I need this done by, you know, 9 o'clock Monday morning. And it's a whole total shift. Well, the operational people don't have the voice to say, you know, man, no, we've stretched all of our resources thin. We don't have enough time, people, resources to make that happen. But the directional people be like, I don't care, get it done. You know, to me, that's not healthy when organizations function like that.
Interesting.
Yeah. I had a client in my office today actually talking about that in the place he works, and how he's in that more of a operational, tactical, get things done role. And, you know, frequently, you know, the other folks will come to him and just say, hey, I know you've been doing this for 4 days, change it. We got to have this done. It needs to be done 24 hours. And he goes, like, literally, it's impossible to do it in that window. And then they demand him to be done. So he does something, but what he does is not the quality that he would normally do.
Mm-hmm.
And so then when it's presented, then, you know, he gets evaluated as being incompetent in his job because he tried to do something that normally takes him 45 hours. He tried to do it in a 22, 24-hour window of time. You know, so those are the challenges when organizations don't value the expertise in each of the different areas. It's kind of like what you were talking about. No person can see it all, so therefore the CEO can't see it all. Healthy CEOs can defer to other people and go, gosh, I really want to pull that trigger, but the CFO is saying this, I really need to lean in and listen.
Yeah. There's a lot in that.
Yeah.
I don't know that I've ever been a part of a company that I would probably describe as healthy then, in that, with that definition.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, unfortunately for the operational tactical people, certain personality type, you kind of get cast into that role mm-hmm. because you are conscientious. You get things
right.
done, and, you know, if you're not running the company and something has to change, then I think what you're describing that your client said or did, that those are your only options.
Right. Right.
I mean, you know, I mean it, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. No, I see it everywhere. You know, you see it in the construction world. I mean, And I get there's a tyranny of the urgency, and somebody's got to be willing to make hard decisions, say, hey, this is when something needs to be done. I just think it can be done in a way that's more, oh, God, I hate that word, that's more aware of the needs of everybody as opposed to just my way is always the right way. And I don't think anybody's always right.
Yeah, that's true.
You know,
somewhere, probably somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
Because I don't know that you can... being aware of the needs of everyone, that'd be tough.
Yeah, no, right. I agree.
But a lot in between that and my way is the right way. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So
what's the line? There's a lot of golf. A
lot of golf between here and the hole.
I love that line.
One of my old bosses used to say that. And I would think I'd have a good deal or a good idea brought to him. And, man, a lot of golf between here and the hole on that.
Good golly, Pierce.
Yeah, that's another guy. I've talked to him today. Oh, good golly, Pierce. We're never going to get that done.
I thought maybe that's who you're talking about.
No, those two different guys, but both funny in their own way.
Yeah.
So, no intro today, really. You okay with that? That was really, we
I was
just
really
jumped
good.
Right
I,
in.
I didn't say good morning or good afternoon or good. I didn't say anything. I just like, I looked at you,
you
and you started.
And you're looking at me like now, like I should pat you on the back for that. I didn't say that. I didn't
exactly
raise
right.
enough.
That's so. Exactly. I'm proud of myself.
We had I had lunch with a guy, and he said, are y'all going to continue the leadership conversation
oh,
today?
Oh, interesting. Yeah, so the one guy listened.
Crystallized. Yeah, he listens. Yes. Did anything crystallize? So I thought I'd ask you that because it was on my mind.
Yeah.
What did I ask him another question? He brought up another question.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, that was a few hours ago. Now I can't remember.
There's a whole lot of golf between that
man, I'll tell you what. There's so much golf between here and the hole in my brain that.
Always.
Yeah. It's par five at least. Yeah. A long par five. Yeah. What's on your mind today? It's Wednesday. Unusual day. It's the afternoon.
Yeah.
It's an afternoon taping today, folks.
And usually on Fridays when we're taping. God, we're dating ourselves, aren't we?
There's Are we taping?
There's no tape
when we're recording.
Yeah. You know, usually it's a Friday and I come in here and, you know, it's early in the morning and I haven't seen any clients or anything, so I'm ready to rumble. Today, man, it's the end of a 10-hour day. And so I'm feeling it. It's been a good day. I love the work I get to do. But, man, I had an intensive on Monday and Tuesday. And when I do these intensives,
is an intensive?
Yeah, well, there's a bunch of different kinds of intensives. But one of the ones I love to do is called life mapping. It's just something I've created and begged, borrowed, and stolen from other places as well. But it's a 2-day intensive for men or women who generally are in a season of some type of transition. So it could be as simple as, you know, man, I'm hitting midlife and I'm thinking about maybe, is there a different way I want to do my work? Or for some people, they've just lost a job and they're going, gosh, I need to find a new way forward, and I think I'd like to change industry. So it's not only vocational related, but it seems like that becomes 60% of what we end up talking about. So we walk through 15 to 20 modules in 2 days, and by module, I just mean different exercises where I'll ask them questions or I'll give them things to think about or just have these different exercises to do in real time together. And I'll literally put them up on a big flip chart, and we'll capture notes on those about, you know, what we've discussed. And, you know, we're doing three major things. We're looking back. So where have you been in your life? So some of it, we literally talk about the whole timeline of your life. Like, what were some significant defining moments in your life? So, you know, it may be when you were 8 years old and you're at a birthday party that comes to your mind when you're thinking about. I ask them to come up with like 20 defining moments in their lives.
And, wow, 20.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you don't think you have them until you sit and you really just start thinking.
Wow.
You know, so marriage often ends up in that, or birth of kids may end up in that, or change of job may end up in that. Yeah, you know, but because it was a defining moment where you know it or not, right?
If you don't know that's a defining moment, that's probably a different intensive that you need to go to.
That's exactly right. Yeah. I don't do those kind. But I think you know, we look back and you know, we kind of, what are those defining moments? And in those moments, what were some life lessons that you learned / what are some life messages that you've been carrying around? So, you know, one of the guys I did an intensive with a few months ago, he had lost 3 jobs over probably a 12 or 15 year window. And as we were doing the intensive, one of the things he realized looking back in the past was, oh my gosh, I've developed a sense anywhere I work that's just a matter of time until they're going to fire me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that becomes a limiting belief. So, because how you're going to work is you're just like, okay, I'm about to get fired again. And it just messes with you. So part of what we try to do when we look back is just identify, that's one of the things we do, is what are some of the limiting beliefs or negative thought patterns that you've created? And then we look at the present tense, like, man, what's going on in your life right now? What are you satisfied with? And we have these 5-6 different domains of life that we look like, you know, vocational, financial, emotional, spiritual, relational. You know, how are you doing? Red light, yellow light, green light, those, you know, what are you pleased with? Where are you going, oh my gosh, that part of my life stinks right now. Mm-hmm. We're just honest evaluation, no shame zone at all. Just how are you feeling about those areas? And then we talk about the future, and that's where we spend most of the second, we spend all of the second day kind of very future forward about, all right, we've identified this, we've talked about kind of your values and the desires that you have, and, you know, what would the perfect day look like for you, you know, some exercises like that. And then it really is just saying, all right, so if you could build this next season of life the way you'd like to build it, ideally, you know, no holds barred, how would you build it? Well, we always have to walk back from that because there are limitations we all have. Mm-hmm. But it gives them a chance then to begin dreaming again and going, man, maybe I should try this. I've never tried that before. And who are the people I know? And then we start trying to get in the very tactical part of it. Like, what would be some next steps to take for you to begin trying to change some of these areas? So, sorry, that was a lot. But that's kind of a snapshot of what that is. And I really enjoy doing those. Feedback I've gotten is just that, you know, for people, I mean, I can think of a couple guys right now who it totally changed their career path. And I don't think I do something magical. All I do is I invite them to put themselves in the spotlight of their own life for 2 days.
Yeah.
Who are you? Where you been? What do you like? What don't you like? Hey, what would you like to do next? What keeps you from doing that? I mean, oversimplistically, Steve, those are kind of the questions we're talking about.
Yeah. Pull out the inventory that's already in there.
Yeah, that you already carry around with you every day. You know what I mean? Yeah, yeah. So that's been fun. Just when I get to do those with people, why did we get talking about that though?
You were talking about somebody
did
you did
the
an
last
intensive.
2 days.
You did it the last 2 days, and I said just I wanted to so people would know what an intensive is if they didn't know what that is.
Yeah.
And
well, now we know.
Now we know.
I have no idea why
and where
we
you were going before that, I don't know.
Me either, but it was going to be life-changing, so maybe we'll tune in.
We can pause and edit out and make it seem like there's no gap.
Yeah,
there.
Just seamless right here.
You're talking about it's late in the day. Maybe you're talking about you're tired, more tired. So, although it's hard to tell with you.
Yeah.
You can never tell you're tired.
I know, but I know my brain is.
Yeah.
So the my office walls, I take down these pictures on the wall, and I have like 20, 25 flip chart pieces of flip chart paper. That we've captured all this information about the person up on the wall. And one of the deliverables I have is I want to deliver them a booklet that says, hey, here's everything that you've said about your life. Here's what you said your next steps are going to be. Because we're going to have some follow-up meetings after that for the spirit of accountability, what's working, what's not working. So my deliverable is I just put together a little booklet that's probably 20, 25 pages that represents all those flip charts. So this morning, I had my first client at 8 o'clock, and I thought, I've got to capture all this stuff off these flip charts while they're hanging up in here, because I don't like to take it home and do it. I'd rather just have it done while it's all, you know, easy to see. So I was in my office at 6 this morning, and for like 2 hours, just, you know, typing all this stuff up, capturing it, and beginning to format it for the little booklet I give them. So like at 7:45, I'm tearing those off the wall and getting my office put back together, and oh my gosh, when my first 8 o'clock client came in this morning, I thought, okay, I feel like I've already worked half a day today.
All right.
So been a long but good day.
Are intensives typically with one person or a group?
I do them both ways. I'd say 80% of what I do are individual. They're one-on-ones. Mm-hmm. That's that image of I just want you to be in the spotlight of your life. I almost don't want your spouse to be here to say, oh, Steve, I think this would be good for you. I'd rather you just be going, man, what is it that's really stirring me?
My spouse wouldn't say that.
Jen would never give you suggestions like that.
No. You must be thinking I'm married to someone else.
Yeah. Well, we could have Caroline come in. She would stay really quiet,
yeah.
I'm sure.
It's hard to get her to come out of her shell.
There are some intensives I'll do for small groups, 6-8 people, go away around some topic. Usually we'll go away, get out of the office, maybe go to the mountains for, you know, a day or 2 days, and we'll just look at some topic that there's a common interest in. One of the ones I've done recently is about addressing or facing midlife, the midlife transition. You know, a lot of men are thinking about, I'm sure women are too, but it seems like I end up with more men on that kind of group. Just what does it mean to go through midlife well? And it's just, you know, a little bit of content I offer, but a lot of it is just facilitating a conversation with, you know, 6-8 guys, and those can be pretty powerful moments too.
What age do you think that starts?
gosh, I've been doing a lot of reading on that in the last couple of years, and it's interesting. People talk about midlife starting as early as 35.
Wow.
I know. That feels too young to me. But extending.
Well, if you're from where we are, Arkansas and East Tennessee, maybe that's probably right. That may be old age.
Yeah, even, yeah, you know. But one guy talks about that midlife is still happening like at 60, and I'm going, okay, that feels too old, you know, to me. But you know, the reality is we're living a little bit longer in these days, and our careers are going a little bit longer for a lot of people. And so, you know, and our careers are starting a little bit later. So that's kind of how they're talking about it. But I think midlife is, it's almost less of a number, and it's more of, I think, a state of mind in a season of life. You know, it seems like when those of us who are parents, it seems like when our kids start to leave home, you know, especially when the last one's getting ready to leave home, it seems like there's kind of this scratch our head moment where we're like, oh my gosh, what now? What does this mean? I think that's got some of the midlife vibe and feel to it. But I love to take guys that are in their early 40s to early 50s through this midlife material because it gives them a chance to really look and say, man, whenever midlife comes, how can I be ahead of the curve? How can I know what's coming? How can I, at some level, you know that it's coming? And how can I be thinking in some key areas of life so I navigate that well?
Are guys responsive to that, what would you call it, proactive approach? Can you be proactive in that area, you think?
Well, I mean, I think you can be proactive in understanding something's coming. I don't think you can be proactive in predicting, therefore, you know, at 54 and a half, this is what I'm going to do.
Yeah, or I'm going to feel this way.
Right, right. But I think there's a lot of categories when we think about midlife, second half of life, that some of us never even think about, and suddenly they sneak up on us, and we feel, if we don't have some awareness that this is coming, mm-hmm. then I think it can almost feel overwhelming. In my own journey,
right?
I think the whole spiritual journey and just, you know, what happened in my own story in my early 50s, late 40s and early 50s of just feeling like, oh my gosh, am I losing my faith? What's wrong with me? Because there were questions that I started asking that I'd never asked. And I think when I begin to, you know, navigate it and walk with, you know, a wise Sherpa counselor with me, I think I begin realizing my questions aren't unique. I'm not the first guy to ask these questions. There's a couple books in the Old Testament that ask the same questions I'm asking. Mm-hmm. But I don't think I was fully equipped to be prepared for it to hit me in such an emotional way and mental way. And so, you know, I think to be able to give guys the, not saying this is what's going to happen to you, because who knows, but being able to say, hey, it's super common when we get to midlife that we begin looking at some things. And it's not, quote unquote, deconstructing in a negative way, but it may very well be a sense of going, huh, I need to think about that. How am I doing that? Work, is there a better way for me to work with more balance than there has been in the first half of my career? Those are some good questions to just be aware that those conversations for you may be coming.
What's the thing you see most common?
In
men. So you just said, I want to see that's coming or that's that.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
what's
the most common?
Yeah. Yeah.
What's the most common thing that men are blindsided by in midlife crisis?
I think for most guys, and this is one man's opinion, I could be wrong, but I think most of it has to do with career, job, vocational path.
Okay.
You know, I think for most of us guys, let's say you start working at 22, 23, you know, post-college, building career path, and, you know, maybe have one or two false starts. Most of us guys really hit our stride late 20s, early 30s, going, okay, this is what I want to do. You know, we dabble in a few other things. In a lot of stories, it seems like. But even if you start in your early 20s, I feel like our 20s and our 30s, we're just blowing and going, building, trying to get the next promotion or advancement or make more sales to make more money. You know, I mean, just grinding. It's great. I think that's what that's about. I think somewhere in your 40s, the beginning of midlife or pre-midlife, if you please, I think for a lot of guys, there's this like, oh my gosh, what a grind. What am I doing? Is this what I really signed up to do? I mean, I feel like I hear that so often. And so, you know, the easiest thing to do is just do a wholesale change. Well, forget it. I'm gonna quit doing this. I'm gonna go doing that. That's probably not reasonable for most guys. So I think part of the midlife process is being able to stop. And I think it's okay to ask the question, do I need to change career paths? But sometimes the deeper question is, do I need to change how I'm doing my career path. Sometimes there's more fruit even in that question.
What's the difference?
Well, changing my career path is, you know, I've been doing job A, and now I'm going to do job Z. You know, I can't think of a great example top of the head, but, you know, just radical change. You know, I think of a friend of ours who, you know, I've been in the corporate world and human resources. That's what I've done. Forget it. I'm going to go back to school and become a counselor. Again, nothing wrong with that, but that's a pretty radical shift. Mm-hmm. You know, that's one way to do it. But for other guys, I think it's looking at how you do your work and realizing, wow, this is probably closer to my story. You know, I wore 4 or 5 hats probably in my pastor days that I did. And, you know, that was what I did, and that was my identity. You know, whether it was, well, it doesn't matter what they were, but the different hats I wore. I think part of my midlife transition was being able to go, hang on a minute. There's one hat that I really enjoy the most. I get the most feedback about that hat. And that hat is walking with people in a kind of a coaching, counseling relationship. So I didn't totally change careers at one level, but what I really did is I refined the career I'd been in to go, ah, this is the part of it that's the sweetest right. spot for me.
Right.
So wholesale change versus, oh, let me just refine and figure out.
An adjustment.
Out, yeah, how the next season may look like.
Yeah.
An adjustment that created better alignment, that's the goal I would have for somebody.
Do you think, we've talked about this before, but do you think guys at that age realize, do you think they've, is part of it that they thought they could get satisfaction out of their work and they are not?
Mm-hmm.
Or you think they're just misaligned in their skill set
question.
Or what's your thought after observing a lot of people?
Yeah. Remember the old John Eldridge material that, you know, yeah. we were exposed to? You know, I remember Eldridge had this exercise he would do with guys, you know, around midlife. And he'd say, you know, what did you really want to be when you were 12 years old? You know? And in his mind, I think, I mean, I'm being oversimplistic, but in his mind, it was like, then we've got to go back and capture that thing that you never were able to do because you became responsible and went to med school or whatever you did, you know?
Right.
Well, I think at one level, there's something true in that some of us have laid down the deepest dreams and longings that we had when we were 12, 20, 25, because, well, I need to make more money or I need to do this or this is going to provide better. And so sometimes I think there really is that need to go, is there something I've laid down that I need to pick back up? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, yeah, I think all of that, going back to the word that you captured a minute ago, I think all of that is in that vocational and that career space and just looking at, is there a different way to do it?
What else? What else eats away at a man or woman at that age, midlife crisis? Mm-hmm. If number one is usually vocation, what's one A or mm-hmm. B, or number two?
Yeah, yeah. These great questions. What I usually see, I'm thinking about my life mapping, and because life mapping ends up being a midlife exercise mm-hmm. unintentionally, because guys are usually around that season when they come to me. Health seems to be a biggie.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. I would not have guessed that.
Yeah.
I mean, I
don't know that it's number two, but I'm not sure it's not
like
either.
In what way I'm not healthy? I need to be
for
healthier.
For the most of the guys, it's like, man, I've laid that. I mean, it's my story, you know, I've laid that on the back burner, and now, man, I had to see my doctor, and he wants me to get this med. Or, gosh, I just know mm-hmm. I'm not able to keep up with my adolescent boy when we went out to the mountains to go hiking or something. So, you know, that seems to be a big one. I think the other big one is in the relationship category, but it falls in one of two areas. It's either the marriage that, you know, oversimplistically, I see one parent that's really focused a lot on building the career, providing for the family, the other parent that's really been, you know, making sure the kids grow up and get through school and all their activities. And so they kind of have this in midlife, they kind of go, wow, we've kind of neglected us. We're okay. Or, you know, we're getting by, but there's a lot of deep hurt, loneliness that seems to show up there. And the other place relationally, especially with men that I work with, is it's the name of that book from 20 plus years ago, The Lonely American Male. They wake up and they realize, my gosh, you know, I used to have all my boys in the frat house or on the ball team. And wait a minute, I know a lot of people, but I don't have anybody that really knows me or has got my back.
Right.
And So I think those are the one, two, and threes probably that show up.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. What would come to your mind with that? That when you, I mean, it's not like you're unaware of this in your own personal story as well as with many guys that you hang out with.
I'm just excited that one guy thinks midlife is 60. I haven't gotten past that. Yeah, I've been hanging on. My brain is stuck there. I'm like, hell yeah, that's good, man.
Okay, but yeah, so yeah, does that mean you want to make it to 95 or 100?
No, I don't. I don't. I don't think, Jeff, anybody wants me to make it to 95 or 100. You know what I mean? Yeah,
we could take a survey of our listeners.
No, I don't think we need to. I don't think we need to.
The data's already in.
Yeah, I think it is. Use the phrase curmudgeon. I think, man, when I get to be 90, what kind of curmudgeon am I going to be? No, I think that's... I was just interested to hear what your feedback is on the order. I think it's I've had all those things. Your kids grow up, and we're in that generation that paid particular attention to their kids. We're trying to be better dads and moms. We're at all the events.
Didn't miss a thing, right?
I mean, it's very first world, so I, understand that. So we didn't miss anything. Mm-hmm. And so, but everything has its place, and everything, there's a cause and effect for everything. So our kids go, and all of a sudden we're like, wow, I'm living in the house with this person. Do I know them? Do I like them? What have we done? Have we done well? And you have to kind of reintegrate yourself with your spouse.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I hear that a ton.
Is that, you hear that a lot. Yeah.
Just like, hey, I'm just, some deep things that have never been resolved. Kids mask a lot of stuff.
They do. That's a great way to say it.
And so, they go, that stuff's unmasked, and so now you have to deal with it.
Yeah.
And on the other side, though, you can still have a great relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some work involved in that. Mm-hmm. I think Jen would agree with that. I mean, we've had some...
Yeah.
It was rough, I think, at times when our kids were gone.
Yeah.
Because we're like, hey, man, we had really paid a lot of attention and...
Focused on them.
Yeah. And so... Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. But yeah, the career stuff's... interesting too, because you think, man, that's really not. I think it dawned on me in my 40s, or 50, maybe it was earlier. I don't know that I like to work. I like to have a lot of things going.
Right.
I like what I do. I had a couple of buddies that have told me in the past, you don't talk about your work a lot.
Huh.
And I thought it's not the thing I want to talk about, I guess, when I get with other people. It's not, I mean, it's interesting, but it's only interesting if you're in that industry to me.
Yeah.
It's not super interesting if you're not.
Yeah.
So, I've never looked at it. And I guess I'm trying to figure out now too. I get some satisfaction out of it, but I'd rate that satisfaction as a, 5, 6
rather than
an 8.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you kind of realize, hey, that's not meant to. It can't provide you ultimate satisfaction. It's not meant to.
Yeah. And you like that, right?
I think so. Yeah. But I don't know. Maybe I'm not being honest with myself on that. Maybe I might get more satisfaction out of it than I think.
Yeah.
I had a day not long ago where this doesn't happen very often. Everything went the right direction that day. It was really energizing.
Yeah.
But temporarily.
Yeah.
What I mean? So.
But maybe that's the word. Maybe it's that word temporarily.
Maybe it's as good as it can be.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe that's the idea that you're talking about, is that there's nothing wrong with, I think, days being energizing, work being energizing, but to kind of right size it, that it's not the most important thing. It's not, and there's a temporary bliss to it for most of us, and then there's other days that are like, oh, we're just grinding to get through.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
and some of that's okay. I think that's life.
Yeah. So the transition for midlife, one of the things you see is. With marriages, I talked about kind of this whole job deal. Do you hear that much?
Yes, but I think it's the second one you talked about versus maybe a career change.
Yeah.
It's just a reevaluation, realignment. I think, particularly, I noticed I had a short stint with a company. Big company, and there's a group that wants to move up the ladder.
Mm-hmm.
There's a group that's just kind of getting by, content to be where they are. And then you also see these guys that I think they start to realize in their 40s, man, I'm here and I'm stuck.
Yeah.
And you know, what else could I have done? What can I do now? They've got the golden handcuffs and, mm-hmm. and all that. So, yeah, I see that as a, you know, you have to reevaluate that. Yeah. And now you, you know, to your point, it's not as easy to make a transition. You've mm-hmm. got responsibilities and mm-hmm. things going on now. And
Yeah. That reminds me of that Richard Rohr book we read together, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago, Falling Upward,
mm-hmm.
You know, where he's talking about spiritual pathways, but I think it's true in vocational pathway as well. He says, you know, there comes a point in most of our lives, in all of our lives, where we hit some, he calls it a crisis of limitation, where we realize, oh my gosh, there's something I can't do anymore.
Yeah.
And he says there's three options there. One, he draws this chart, and in the first half of life, he says, we're just ascending, we're just growing, building our kingdom. Right, again, rightly so. He says, we hit the crisis of limitation. Some of us, we bust through the wall of limitation. And we go, I'm just going to keep ascending. I'm going to reinvent myself, retool myself, and I'm going to be better and faster and sharper and blah, 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 you know. And
the sports car and the 25-year-old
that's
girlfriend.
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
That's the metaphor he used, right? You know, it's that sense of going, you know, I become the old fool if I'm not careful.
Right.
And the second group, he drew a flat line, just straight out line instead of an ascending line. It was a flat line. He just said, you know, this is what he calls the embittering journey. He said, these are the guys that, well, nothing's ever going to go better. It's always going to be hard. This is as good as it's going to get.
Eeyore.
Exactly. Or as I call it, the old guys at Hardee's at 6 a.m., which my dad was one of. but you know, it is. It's just like, well, the world's falling apart. This is terrible. And there's just this resignation that life is going to suck for the rest of life,
mm-hmm.
you know? And then the third group, and he drew a line down. He said, you know, he goes, the guys that do it, navigate the crisis of limitation well, are the guys that go, hey, I've got to learn how to descend. Well, you can't market that very well. You know, hey, 45-year-old, want to go descend? Because it feels like failure.
Right.
But the twist he had on it was he talked about, no, there's this descending into accepting our limitations and accepting our giftedness and learning to function only in that space of giftedness and not trying to be something that we're not. And I remember he gave, I don't know if this is in the book or if this is in a talk I heard him do on this topic, but he gave these couple great examples of guys who descended well in the second half of life. And the examples he gave were, you know, one was Walt Disney, and the other guy he gave an example of was a guy who ran a restaurant, ran like 10 different businesses for years, and, you know, around his mid-50s realized, gosh, I miss running a restaurant. And when I was running that restaurant, you know, I never sold out of my meatloaf and I never sold out of my chicken fried steak is like an old meat and three, right? He said, but I always sold out of my fried chicken. Wonder if I could sell some fried chicken. And, you know, long story short, Colonel Sanders, you know. But so it's not about a lack of productivity or even quote unquote success in the second half of life. It's about doing it more integrated out of, gosh, this is the best of who I am.
It's almost like you're shedding your skins.
That's a great picture.
Yeah. And you get to, yeah, I think of descending, and man, the first word I think about is failure, for sure.
Exactly.
You said, yeah, it's exactly what I was thinking. I think, and I had this conversation with a friend of mine at lunch, we're just so, I think in our culture, so much of our value is tied to our productivity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
completely agree.
Just almost in every area.
Yeah.
And so, but I do like that you descend into kind of what you are really made to be.
Yeah. Yeah, it warms that word
everywhere.
Up.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, I think, you know.
I mean, you did it. You just mm-hmm. talked about it. Mm-hmm. You took off four hats.
Yeah,
and you kept the one that you're best at.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's the example you gave a minute ago about when the kids leave home. You know, you and Jen, Jeff and Laura, we all have to kind of descend in a way. What's the truth about our season of life now? And,
right.
Except, oh my gosh, our marriage looks different now, but we still love each other. We still want to make it better. What needs to change, you know?
Right.
But it is. So it's a word he redeemed for me that I'm not afraid to descend.
Yeah.
Because, again, acceptance is almost a better word. It's just that sense of, I want to just accept, this is what I do well, this is what I don't do well.
Well, to make that more complicated, I think in God's divine sense of humor, he also, Richard Rohr also talks about women are on a different trajectory.
Oh, that was fascinating.
Yes, I did not know that. So this was a really, that part of the book was really interesting.
Yeah.
They're ascending.
Yeah, in the second half of life.
Yes.
Right, right.
So,
owning all that they've laid aside in a traditional model family. I want to be clear about that.
Yeah.
You know, because it's funny. I have some women that I've worked with who they've been career women, you know, partners at law firms and just blowing and going. And I just realized that when I talk about second half with them, I'm gonna use the same trajectory that we've talked about historically with men, because they've been ascending and now they're needing to slow down and accept limitations, where, you know, the traditional female model he talked about was literally, as you said, just inverted. And there's something powerful. And I think Laura is a great example of watching her second half of life. Well, shoot, I think Jen, even with her return to work world, you know, but I think for Laura, watching her sacrifice a whole lot in the first half of life to be a full-time mom, she loved it. She wanted to be that. But, you know, didn't serve in some ministries that she used to, didn't work much. And, you know, I've watched her the last 12, 15 years, you know, and she works with women. I call her affectionately the woman whisperer when she works with women in her office, or watching the way that she mentors and engages and leads groups of women. I'm just like, gosh, she's living her best life. And I just feel like she's growing in a way that sometimes I look and go, man, I'm envious of that. It's beautiful watching her do that. Mm-hmm. But you're right. It's a very different trajectory. It's weird to be talking about a chart that you and I can visualize and trying to put it to words over a podcast.
I know. I hope
y'all are following along.
I'm thinking about that page in the book, and I'm thinking I can see it in my mind's eye, but yeah, we're having to describe it. That's a little bit different.
Yeah.
It is a good, I think that's a good, to me, that's a better, I'm sure there are, you know, probably not only with him, there are other better illustrations or examples out there of midlife crisis, but that was one where the axis point just kind of shifts for a man. That just made sense intuitively to me, you know, the day you're starting to, and you do have limitations. And some of the limitations are, I can't do a million things at one time, you know, and so, and some of them are mental and emotional, learning how to, hey, what am I really good at? And what's the best use of my time vocationally outside of vocation?
Yeah.
So,
because like you say, I think a lot of us in our 20s and 30s, we have a can-do attitude. Oh, sure, I'll figure out how to do that.
Yeah.
And I think when you get in that second half of life, there's a part of you going, well, I might still be able to figure it out. I don't want to.
Yeah. Toby Keith's song, I Ain't As Good As I Once Was, but I'm As Good Once. Yeah.
That's a great
song. It's just kind of a, you can't do quite as many things.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Oh, when you said Toby Keith's song, we were at a fundraiser last night that had, four songwriters and did a little round. So
always fun.
I haven't been to a lot of those, but yeah, they're always fun. You need to call Jacob, ask him his thoughts on that. Just kind of a sidebar.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He was funny how he saw that one, but it made me think of, this is probably not appropriate to talk about. So I'll say it this way. There's a recovery center for people who struggle with drug and alcohol, abuse.
Okay.
In Middle Tennessee.
Okay.
Pretty well known. And they've got a big fundraiser coming up soon. Mm-hmm. And I heard an ad for it recently. And they're going to do a writer's night. I thought, oh, that's cool. People love those, you know. Yeah. They'll get a big crowd out. And on the radio ad, I heard... tell me if I'm wrong on this.
Because
I may have a blind spot here. I don't think I do. So again, they said, featuring so-and-so, and so and so and so and so, you know, the three guys and or the three songwriters, might have been a woman too, I can't remember. But and they said, and then with each one of their names, they would play one of their hits. I swear to you, all three of the hits were like, one of them was Red Solo Cup, one of them was like, you know, I wasn't gonna drink. Yeah, and I just thought, is that a miss on your marketing plan?
It could be. Here's what I'm gonna say to that.
Okay.
If you're gonna have a songwriter's night in Nashville.
Yeah.
And you're going to eliminate any songs about drinking or womanizing, you're going to have a really tough time finding a songwriter.
Yeah. Well, I got two I can think of.
Having a tough time finding somebody that people are going to want to listen to.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah.
You know?
No.
Well, I'm not going to say names.
No, but it is interesting.
I think if you're in the other way, you could look at it the other way. If you're in recovery, you know that's an issue.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
Probably doesn't bother you that somebody's thinking about it.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. It just sounded paradoxical, ironic.
Yeah, I get that.
To me.
I wouldn't disagree with you.
How'd I get there? Oh, sorry. That was a sidebar.
It's okay. We do sidebars sometimes.
Yeah, I know. Doing well.
I'm going to the Ryman tomorrow night.
What for? Who for?
Jason Isbell.
Yeah, How many times have you seen Jason Isbell?
God, I need to think about it. This is probably number six or seven.
You know, here's interesting feedback for you.
Okay.
You just said that you were going there with the same high level of excitement that you said the first time I heard you were going to go. Like, you love seeing him.
I love going to the ramen. I love seeing him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. There's all the things combined. And sometimes I go with Will. We've gone, he and I have gone a couple of times by ourselves. Sometimes we go with friends. This one's just Jen and I, so it'll be fun.
That'll be good.
And yeah, just 8 nights. And yeah, it's just a, yeah.
What's his show like? Is it pretty acoustic, pretty dressed down, or?
The last one I went to was at the new Pinnacle downtown.
That's right.
And that Will and I went, and he played his new album. It was just him and a guitar.
God.
Unbelievable.
That tells you about talent, doesn't it?
I mean, you know, and everybody's got opinions on artists and people's, you know, like things or don't, but I mean, it's a, it was pretty incredible. His show at the Ryman, though, is, it does a good job. I think he does a good job of back and forth. It's he has got a great guitar player, in my opinion. He plays incredible guitar. He's got a 7 or 8 person band.
Oh, that's fun.
And they kill it for a while, and then they'll slow it down, but they can do both. They can run the gamut.
Yeah, that's cool.
And, you know, I've said this before, that the Ryman is not a place where you just stumble upon. Oh, let's go see who's playing at the Ryman tonight.
You go with intent. Yeah.
You go with some intent, and usually the artist has kind of a cult following. And so that means that it's a high-energy environment.
Yep. Yeah, they're all excited to hear what he's going
to
do.
They came to see him.
That's so cool. And good for you guys.
So we're excited about that.
Fun date night or whatever it is.
It'll be a late date night for the yo guys. I mean, we'll be killing it.
For you?
Yeah. Be at a checkpoint coming back into Williamson County past the curfew or something, you know, having to show our IDs, get back into the county.
Oh, good for you guys. That'll be fun, yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't done a concert in years, I feel like. That may not be true, but it feels like it's been a long time. I don't think about going to concerts much.
Why not?
I don't know.
Not something you enjoy?
Yeah, evidently not. Because
you would
evidently
do it.
Evidently
yeah.
not. Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
What do you guys like to do together? You and Laura.
I think the things that we're realizing this recently, that we don't do a good job of just doing things just the two of us, like date nights. That we
there's some hesitation there. So I'm like, where are you going with this?
She'll listen to this. All no, but I think the things that we say we enjoy doing is we're in this season, we really are enjoying traveling. We're trying to pick that up and doing even just long weekend trips. Like next weekend, I think it is. I'm out next Friday. We need to talk about that. But we got a trip up to DC. That'll be fun. Just the two of us and one other couple. So that'd be the four of us, wouldn't it? Yeah.
So now, I don't know what the East Tennessee math class was like in Cleveland, but that's four.
That's four, yeah. 2 + 2, I think it is. Good call. But, you know, we've got some old people bikes a couple years ago, and we say we love getting out and riding our bikes. The reality is I think we only got them off the wall like twice this summer. But
it's good awareness, though, to say what, you know, this is what we think we like to do or say we like to do.
Just trying to be honest.
But we don't, you know, we don't do it.
Yeah, yeah. But I think right now, it feels like so much of our disposable time, and I'm not complaining at all, is doing something with the grandkid. Yeah, yeah. Like tonight, as soon as we're done here, the reason I have a hard stop is we're driving out to Dixon for one of Shep's last baseball games for the season. Well, I don't want to miss that. And we're going together. We both love doing that. So it's weird because we don't have the traditional, quote unquote, hobby thing as much. And I think we're really both like going, we're okay with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, it's fun.
All right. Well, don't miss the baseball game.